Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Extra Movie Butter Podcast, where every week your Butter Boys lay down our thoughts, opinions, feelings, controversial takes on the box office, movie news, and of course the new movie releases. But then also our favorite segment, where every week, our second segment, we throw a little extra calories on that movie butter for you, where we like to throw in our own twist, our own favorites, and our own takes on some classics, some movies you've never heard of, but certainly movies that strike near and dear to all of us. This week, we're going to be talking about The Voyage of the Demeter. Didn't come out great this weekend. Kicked off at the number five spot, which usually movies that the studios don't have the most confidence in tend to get dropped middle to late August. And that's exactly where The Last Voyage of the Demeter ended up. We'll give our thoughts about that in the third segment. And we have a guest today. The one and only Video Drew herself will be on our show. We're running a little behind with Benny. He's going to join us here in the next couple of minutes. So JTE and I figured we'd kick off the show and talk about the box office breakout. But beforehand, I got to ask JT, you're looking good, pal. How you feeling today?
Yeah, doing good. Had a long day at work, but glad to be here talking some movies. Benny, hopefully he'll join us sooner than later. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I can't wait to dive into this box office because this has been a great year for horror overall. Horror films have been killing it at the box office. And I'm kind of curious why maybe this one didn't. And well, I think we'll get into that. But yeah, go ahead and throw down the box office numbers.
Well, here's the tale of the box office. Barbie again, continuing her dominance. $38.3 million this weekend. $33.8 million this weekend. Oppenheimer still continuing to be the bomb with $18.8 million. TMNT jumping up a spot from last weekend, $15.7 million. Good to see that movie doing well. Meg 2, down a bit, $12.8 million. The Last Voyage of the Demeter, whatever you want to call it, $6.5 million. That ship certainly capsized. Haunted Mansion, $5.6 million at sixth place. Talk to Me, still going strong, $5.1 million. A24, coming out with over a $50 million movie. It's not doing too bad for itself. Sound of Freedom continues to liberate at $4.8 million for $172 million domestic. Mission Impossible, Dead Reckoning, and Jailer. I know nothing of this movie, Jailer, but somehow it cracked the top 10 with $2.5 million. JT, you heard the numbers. Tell us the tale.
Well, first, I'm glad to hear Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Mutant Mayhem jumped up a little bit there because I really want that sequel. Even though it's already been greenlit, I just want good movies to do good in the box office. And that movie was just so entertaining. One of the best times I had in the theater this year. So I'm really excited for that. I want that. I figured that would be the case just because of word of mouth and how good the audience score and the reviews are. I want to make more money, though. I hope it just has legs, kind of like Elemental has had legs. I hope Ninja Turtles has legs for the next couple months. And I want to get back to the horror aspect. You mentioned Talk to Me, which has been doing really good for A24. This year has been just really good for horror films. Insidious, The Red Door, has made like a couple $100 million worldwide. I think it's became the highest grossing Insidious film this past weekend. Megan, you know, all these films this year have been kind of just killing it. Like, what happened to the two vampire movies this year? Renfield, which was more of a comedy than a horror movie. Yeah. So I kind of understand that. But this looks like this Demeter is a gothic horror film. And I'm wondering if this, maybe Dracula's just not in right now. It's too old. People want fresh new ideas, not fresh takes on older ideas. So I think maybe that's the reason why Demeter and Renfield just didn't do so well. I'll get into my review later when we talk about the film, but I know I thought the trailer was interesting, but at the same time, it didn't have that thing like Megan or some of these other films that kind of just went viral or lit up social media. Like, oh, this looks like it's going to be a fun horror movie. I wouldn't call this movie a fun horror movie in any way. It is a much somber, more gothic, kind of very serious horror film, which I enjoy those kind of movies, but maybe audiences just don't feel like they want to spend their buck in the cinema with a, you know, $25 for a popcorn and a soda to see that kind of movie. So overall, pretty good numbers overall. Like I said, happy about Turtles. you know, I don't think they have a lot of faith in this movie, Legend, Last Voyage of Demeter, doing a lot of business. So I think it's okay that I don't think they were, I don't think they're shocked that it came in so low, put it that way.
Well, Benny, welcome, my friend.
Yeah, Benny, join the show live.
Woo-hoo. We're doing it live with Benny. Benny, Barbie took number one. The Last Voyage of the Demeter was number five. And somehow Jailer, a movie none of us have heard of, squeaked into the top 10. What's your take on this weekend's box office, buddy?
Dolls are more popular than boats, which is a sad commentary on our society as a whole. But, you know, who am I to judge? I'm not exactly surprised that, like, the, you know, the Voyage of Demeter didn't do so well. Like, I thought the commercials were really pretty awful and made it look really cheap. But, you know, and Barbie, it's getting repeat business. Like, I wondered if it would. I thought the third week would tell the tale, and the tale has been told. People love the movie, and they are going back to see it. The same thing, strangely, for Oppenheimer. People keep going back to see it, although, you know, I would think it would be a one-time watch, but, you know, humanity as a whole has judged differently, so more power to them.
I, like JT had mentioned, am thrilled that Ninja Turtles is doing well. I want to see a sequel to that one. I definitely very much enjoyed that movie. This past weekend, even in talking to my niece, who's a huge Spider-Verse fan, I was telling my niece, Kendall, you really should watch this Ninja Turtles movie. And my whole family was just kind of like, ah, we're burned out of the Ninja Turtles. It was like, go see this movie. This movie is great. I think a lot of people said that about TMNT, Mutant Mayhem. And so I'm glad to see that that's doing well. I, like Benny, agree. We were all wondering the legs that Barbie and Barbenheimer was going to have. And man, that doll's got legs. The Last Voyage of the Demeter sank like a stone. I think we all saw it coming, right? Agreed. Like, the trailers didn't really do it justice. Maybe if this movie came out 5 years ago, 7 years ago, when vampires were popular, it might have done a lot better for itself. Maybe if this wasn't a two-hour kind of slog fest, and we'll go into that a little bit later. But I don't know. I feel like this movie kind of came out at the wrong time. Even if you put this around Halloween, it probably would have had better legs than throwing it in against, you know, Barbie, Oppenheimer, Ninja Turtles. So not surprised that that didn't do well. And I know absolutely nothing about this movie, Jailer, but it came in and made $2.5 million and cracked the top 10. So I'm curious. Now I need to go and try to find a trailer or some information about it. But the box office tale basically is that Barbie and Oppenheimer continue to kick ass, and hey, they're both great movies. They're both doing well, the box office shows, and good word of mouth for TMNT. Folks, if you have not seen Mutant Mayhem, I think the trio, your extra butter boys here, all can agree that that movie is worth seeing in theaters.
It's definitely solid.
Well, we're moving on to a little bit of movie news. We're going to keep it light today because, again, we do have a guest coming on. So we figured we'd pick a couple of fun topics that we would talk about. And one of them is the one and only Shazam himself, Zachary Levi, as he's slamming Hollywood, basically saying that Hollywood, the reason that movies are declining and that movies aren't doing well in the box office is that Hollywood continues to put out garbage. So over the last couple of weeks, Levi's kind of shot himself in the foot the last few times. He literally shot himself in the foot against his statements that he said with John Wick when the movie, when both of his movies, Shazam Fury of the Gods and John Wick 4, had come out in theaters. So Levi's continuing to kind of say these things out loud in his own defense of the subpar movie that is Shazam Fury of the Gods. I'll read you guys the full quote, and then Benny and JT, I'll go ahead and ask you guys your opinion. Benny, we'll start with you on this next one. But the full quote is, "I personally feel the amount of content that comes out of Hollywood that is garbage. They don't care enough to actually make it great for you guys. They don't. And the only way for us to change any of it is to not go to the garbage. We have to actually not choose the garbage. It'll help. It'll help a lot." He's basically encouraging people from going to see Meg 2, right? That's pretty much what he's saying. But Benny, Levi slamming Hollywood as a whole, saying there's too much garbage in theaters. What's your thoughts?
One, you should definitely go see Meg 2. I liked it. But secondly, there have always been more bad movies than good movies. That's just like my personal opinion. Like from the dawn of movies, if you go back and you look at all the movies, let's say released in the 1930s or the 1940s, only a select few of them survive the test of time. Most of them are throwaways that people don't remember within a few years of them being released. That's the history of movies, you know? It's just like baseball. If you're batting 300, you're a Hall of Famer. That's the way movies have always been. Zachary Levi is probably a 200 hitter in his film career. So, like, I don't get the criticism. This is just what movies are. It's very hard to make a good movie. There are very few people that can do it consistently. And telling people not to go see them, that's just going to get fewer movies made and make there be less good movies. Because, you know, like, let's say The Meg makes $600 million. Whether you think it's a good movie or not, that's going to fund three other movies. One of those will probably be good. Two will probably be bad. But if The Meg tanks and the studio goes under, you don't get any of those three movies. So you don't get good movies, bad movies, or any movies. So what he's saying makes no sense to me.
How about you, JT? Zachary shitting on Hollywood, putting out too much garbage. What's your thoughts?
If he was in a lot of that garbage, he wouldn't be complaining at all. This guy, I just think, you know, he's frustrated because Shazam bombed. It was. I don't think it was horrible. Like, I don't even think Shazam Fear of Gods was garbage. It just wasn't as good as the first movie, and it wasn't very good. It wasn't garbage. Garbage is like epic movie. Remember when they were doing those spoof films every other 6 months? Like, not scary movies. Scary movies were good because those were done by the Wayne brothers, but there was like epic movie, disaster movie. That to me is just pure garbage. I think it's kind of insulting because I think some of these people are actually trying to make good movies. I like Michael Bay. I think Ambulance is a really well-directed movie. It's a fun thriller. And if he's throwing that in there with the garbage word, I don't know. I think he's stepping out of bounds a little bit. I think he's just mad because his movie bombed because he thinks it's like the greatest family film ever made, apparently. He was like, take your kids to see it. It's a really good movie. It's a family movie. I think he's just a little, you know, he's a little hurt after his reception of Shazam. Did given a DC character, like you're given the keys to like a franchise and then your whole thing just goes down the toilet. You got to be a little butthurt about that. And I feel like that's where these comments are coming from. Just a place of frustration and maybe a little bit of sadness.
I think he's gone into the Stephen Dorff territory, whereas my career's not working out all that great. So fuck all you guys. I should be the star. I think that's what's happening.
Yeah, I mean, you said it yourself, JT. Like you're given the lead of a DC movie, and it's an obscure character. And in my opinion, the first Shazam movie is a home run. It was great. They didn't film it on a high budget, and like the humor really, really hit in that movie, and the heart really hit in that movie. All of that was missing from Shazam Fury of the Gods. Like the child versus like the Shazam adult, like Zachary Levi, and I'm completely drawing a blank of the kid who plays Shazam as a boy, Jack Dylan Glazer, excuse me. The two of them were just not in sync with each other. Zachary Levi was playing him like he was 12, and Jack Dylan Glazer was playing himself like he was 18 or 19 years old. So the whole movie just didn't seem to sync up, and I don't know. It was dumb. I did not enjoy it. But, you know, him saying, you know, basically that Hollywood is putting out garbage and the whole reason, you know, that his movie tanked is there's just too much garbage out there. Well, look, that's basically shitting on the old analogy of, you know, beauty is in the eye of the beholder. To JTE's point, there's a lot of movies that I can say, you know what, I did not like that. That both you, JT, and Benny would be like, dude, that movie is a masterpiece. Everyone has a different opinion. Everyone likes a different thing. And basically saying that means like, okay, well, if you're saying that, then to Benny's point, the studios aren't going to make nothing. We're not going to get anything. Yeah, you have to have a lot of movies out there to appeal to a larger audience. But at the end of the day, Hollywood is a business. It has to make money. It has to put out, these studios have to put out movies to make money. They need to get a return for their investment. So, again, I understand that he's upset his movie did not did well. I don't think we're going to see Zachary Levi headlining a lot of like big name movies at this point in time. Zachary Levi is going to sign a 7-movie deal with Netflix here soon. And, you know, we're going to get like Red Notice 7 and he'll be, you know, the main villain in that one. So, I mean, hey, you're mad your movie didn't work out. Don't shit on the people who are signing your paychecks, because then there's not going to be any paychecks left to come. On to some more fun news.
Sorry, guys. My dog is, whenever he hears about Shazam Fear of the Gods, he just gets upset.
He's just got a different opinion. He thinks it's a cinematic masterpiece.
He doesn't like Zachary Levi very much.
But some fun news announced today is that Margot Robbie and Ryan Gosling will be returning again together in an upcoming prequel to the Ocean's 11 franchise. So it will be a prequel to Ocean's 11. Knowing this franchise as well as I do, I personally think that they might be playing Linus's parents and how they got their start in the business and started to form this relationship. I love the Ocean's world. I love Ocean's 11, 12, and 13, and I love Ocean's 8. I'm a sucker for these whodunit crime capers, and the Ocean's franchise, every one of them sings to me. I love this news. The two of them obviously have great chemistry. The two of them at this point in time can make any movie that they want. And there's something about this movie that obviously spoke to both of them besides the opportunity to work together again. So hearing that the two of them signed on to be in an Ocean's 11 prequel, sign me up, take my money now. JT, your thoughts?
I want a refund and I want him to go back to the drawing board. I am not a big fan of the Ocean's 11 franchise for the most part. I think the first film's fun. I think getting all those stars together. But like, really, you're going to take your, you're going to dominate with Barbie and then you're going to go do a prequel to another film like Ocean's 11, which I don't, the kids on the street aren't wearing Ocean's 11 backpacks out there. I'm not seeing people arguing which is the best Ocean's 11 movie. It was fine for its time, and I think having George Clooney, Brad Pitt, and all those guys. I mean, the last one they did, Ocean's 8, did horrible at the box office. It bombed. It didn't get good reviews, and it did horrible at the box office. So I don't know why they're pulled to this property. Now, that being said, you know, I do hope they have good taste, and the script maybe is really good. Maybe they just really like the material and they could actually make a fun movie. But this is not, this doesn't excite me. I'm not like, oh, yes, Ocean's 11. God, I can't wait to see these two. I'd rather see them in a much more original film or just something a little bit more exciting for my taste. But there are some Ocean 11 fans out there. I don't hear too many Ocean 12, 13s, or 8 fans out there, though.
Ocean 13 is the best one in the franchise.
That's the first time I ever heard that right now. That's, I never heard that before.
Well, Benny, what's your thoughts? Barbie and Ken reunited, pulling off a crime caper. What are you thinking?
It depends on who the rest of the cast is with the movie, to be honest. Like those two are fine together, but this is, I enjoy the Ocean's franchise. I think it has two great movies and two good movies. So I don't think there's a terrible movie in the entire crop that they've put out. Like even Ocean's 8, which I think is a little step down from the others, I still thought it was a good movie and I enjoyed it quite a bit. But I also think if it's completely disconnected from the other movies, I think in a lot of ways that's why Ocean 8, you know, didn't do so great. Like the only real connective tissue it had was Yin. You know, there was no Clooney or Pitt that really tied it together, brought it in. So if there's some kind of connective tissue, even though it's a prequel, like I will appreciate that. Otherwise, I don't know why it's just not a standalone Margot Robbie, Ryan Gosling heist movie, you know, which I think anybody would be interested in seeing at this point. So like, until I hear the rest of the cast, like I feel not one way or another about them doing an Ocean's movie, but I am really interested to see those two do a heist movie together, if that makes any sense whatsoever.
And I threw in this final story for us to review just simply because I think that this is so outrageous, but I'm crossing all of my fingers, saying a prayer that this ends up being true. There are rumors right now that Taylor Swift has been cast as the character of Dazzler in Deadpool 3. I told JT this before we started the show that Taylor Swift's concerts right now are drawing so much revenue in the cities that they're going to that they are literally keeping some cities out of recession. So I want this to happen so badly because I'm not the biggest Taylor Swift fan, but man, if you were going to cast somebody to play Dazzler, who the hell better than Taylor freaking Swift? So I'm over the moon about this, and I'm seriously hoping that this is going to be the case, even if it's just in a stupid tongue-in-cheek cameo, which it's Deadpool 3, so of course it would be a stupid tongue-in-cheek cameo, but I'm all about this. I don't know if it's true. I read this and was like, dude, I really, really hope that this is the case. Benny, Taylor Swift as Dazzler, does she fit into a Deadpool movie? I mean, we all remember her being crushed to death in the movie Amsterdam, her Taylor Lautner scene in Valentine's Day, her unforgettable role in Cats. So she's obviously got theatrical chops given that resume. What's your thoughts on Taylor Swift going to Deadpool 3?
Every time they add another cameo that they announce to Deadpool 3, like the less interested I become in Deadpool 3 by the day. Like, I think Deadpool and Wolverine at this point are going to be in the movie for 5 minutes because that's what they're going to have to do to fit in all of the cameos. It's just going to be like 30-second cameos strung together somehow. But yeah, sure, Taylor Swift will be a fine Dazzler in a 2-minute scene. If it's more than that, that's probably a bit too much. And I say this as someone that is not the Taylor Swift demographic, but who actually really likes her music, strangely enough. Like her stuff with Bon Iver, world class. But that being said, if it's more than 2 minutes, it's way too much. And stop adding people to the Deadpool 3 cast for the love of God.
JTE, Swifter.
Yeah, it's going to be 30 seconds, so I really don't care. I mean, Dazzler is not somebody I'm like, I need to see Dazzler. I need to see her represented on screen. I remember her mainly from the, you know, arcade X-Men game from like the 90s. That's all I really know about the character. Yeah, cool. Go for it. I think Ryan Reynolds, I think he's probably friends with her. She's probably friends with her, Blake Lively and Ryan Reynolds. So throw her in there for one scene. The cameos are going to be insane in this movie. I'm curious if it's going to feel like we're watching Ready Player One. We're just trying to pick out all the Easter eggs and all the little callbacks to other Marvel properties. But I don't think they're going to ask much of her. And yeah, I think it's going to be a fun cameo in the Swifty Heads or whatever they call themselves. They'll make them another extra $5 million opening weekend just because she's in it.
I mean, if you think back to like Deadpool 2, you had Matt Damon had a cameo in that movie. Alan Tudyk had a cameo in that movie. Brad Pitt had a cameo in that movie. Like there were top flight stars that had these tiny, tiny little 10 second, 30 second blink and you miss it cameos. So I'm kind of thinking that all of these stars that they're announcing potentially in the Deadpool movie, I think it's going to be very, very quick, short cameos, just like we got in Deadpool 2. And those cameos all worked. We all laughed our asses off when we saw Brad Pitt for 3 seconds shocking on the wires as the Vanisher.
I don't know about that, that they all worked, but you know, it to each their own.
Fair enough. Well, we are going to cut our new segment short. We're going to move on to our second segment where your three movie butter boys, we're going to sit here and talk about our favorite vampire movies. And then after that, our review of The Last Voyage of the Demeter with Video Drew herself. Stay tuned.
To fight with courage. To love with passion. To live with honor.
You are the only person I can trust.
This is Carlito's Way.
Got a dream, baby.
People magazine calls it a great film. Visually spectacular. Al Pacino is electrifying. Sean Penn gives a knockout performance. And Penelope Ann Miller is stunning in Brian De Palma's Carlito's Way.
What makes the baby Ruth bar so intense? In this hand, I have a regular candy bar. And in this hand, I have a baby Ruth bar. Let's see which one's more intense. I don't feel it. I what? Is it touching my head? I don't know. Let me try the baby Ruth. Ah! You can feel the peanuts and the caramel and nougat. It's pulsating with energy. Oh, that's intense. That's intense. Gotta take it away from my head. Baby Ruth, this stuff is intense.
Welcome back to what has always been our favorite segment, and that's the Extra Movie Butter. And this week, in honor, maybe dishonor, of the voyage of the Demeter, we're going to talk about our favorite vampire movies. Now, this isn't exactly a franchise that I'm like over the moon, or excuse me, a subject for movies that I'm completely over the moon about. But there are a few in here that, as I was making my list earlier today, that I was like, oh, shit, that's right. That's a good movie. But to kick things off, we got to throw it to JTE. I'm figuring Lost Boys is probably going to be in his top few right there. So let's throw it over to you, pal.
I mean, yeah, we'll start there. Sure. Lost Boys is just a great 80s movie. It's not scary. Like, even as a kid, when I watched Lost Boys, I was never scared. It's just a fun time at the cinema. Keith R. Sutherland, you know, he was a bully in Stand By Me, and he's just upgraded in this movie. He's like the badass bullies on the boardwalk. So Lost Boys is a very fun movie. And when I look at a lot of the vampire films, none of them really I was like scared of. They're not really something that, even though they're horror films, like the movies that I kind of lean towards are the more fun vampire movies. Like, another one I'll bring up is From Dusk Till Dawn. Tarantino, Robert Rodriguez. Sure. Half the movie feels like a Tarantino film, and then halfway through it turns into a monster mash of vampires and just over the top. I like that kind of vibe. I actually recently rewatched Interview with a Vampire, and it's okay. I think the movie had a lot of hype because Tom Cruise, Brad Pitt, you know, his introduction of Kirsten Dunst as a little vampire kid. But the movie is not like amazing. I think it's just a solid vampire movie. It's a much more sexier vampire film. So to me, like you said, Moose, it's not a character I'm like super excited for, but I do like when people do different things with it. The last film I'll mention that I think is probably the scariest or the most deep when it comes to these vampire films is not the remake, Let Me In, but the original, Let the Right One In, which I believe was a Danish film. That's a great movie, and that's a great take on vampires that I think is really cool. I have some honorable mentions, but I'll kick it back to you guys and give us some more of your favorites.
Benny, how about you, buddy? What are some vampire movies that strike your fancy?
Well, obviously, there's The Lost Boys. That's sort of like the quintessential 80s vampire movie. So that one, you know, if you're saying you can watch one vampire movie, what is it? Of course, it's The Lost Boys. But I would say there's another sort of, I want to say it's the late 80s. It's a vampire movie called Near Dark with Bill Paxton in it. Now, the movie it's of its time and it's dated, but it's the first vampire movie that I ever remember seeing where they tried to get like, okay, if there really were vampires, what is their day-to-day life actually like? Because it's not going to be glamorous. It's going to be pretty violent and dirty and transient. And it really tried to create that world. And that was the first time I ever saw a vampire movie try to do that. There's been a lot of movies since then that try to do it. But I definitely think if you're into the vampire genre, like Near Dark is definitely a movie that you want to check out.
Catherine Bigelow.
Yeah.
Early career.
It's a strong movie. I mean, it still is. And this is what JTE was talking about, Let the Right One In. Probably about 3 weeks ago, I watched a parody of it. It was a low-budget Irish movie.
Oh, no.
Called Let the Wrong One In. And it is really, really funny. It's a horror comedy. But it's essentially about this young guy and his brother gets bitten by a vampire, but his brother is an addict and isn't allowed in their house. But he's showing up and he's trying to help him because he's a vampire. And it's so stupid and violent, but it is hilarious. So, like, if you're into low-budget horror, and, you know, and you want just something a little different, it's Let the Wrong One In. It's an Irish movie. I want to say it was a 2022 release. It may have been 2021. But it's another one that's definitely worth checking out.
It's funny that they spoofed that film, because I feel like that's not a super well-known movie. I think maybe in, like, cinema circles, but it's not like The Exorcist and Repossessed, where it's just like they're spoofing an all-time great film. It's just crazy they spoofed such a small indie film.
Well, I know that's what's so like unique about it. Like, you don't have to have any knowledge of like the movie that it's making fun of or ripping off.
Oh, okay.
It completely stands on its own, but it's definitely a spoof of those movies. And just like on a side note, I know that we're a movie podcast, but like if you're a vampire aficionado, like I encourage you to check out the book series, The Dresden Files. You know, it's a supernatural book series about a wizard detective that you know, explores supernatural crime, and a lot of the villains in the book are vampires, and it's just some really good content if you're into vampires or supernatural horror movies. So definitely check it out.
Well, I wrote down a few. One of them was Let the Right One In. One of them was 30 Days of Night.
Excellent movie. I really like that movie a lot.
Based on a graphic novel directed by David Slade, Josh Hartnett. A lot of people had an issue with the ending. I won't say what it is in case you haven't seen it. But very gory kind of stylistic take on a vampire, which I think visually that movie is really cool.
One of the coolest things about that movie was like the vampires hunted in packs. They weren't like lone, you know, they had a alpha male, like part of like leader of their group. They almost hunted like animals. And like the whole concept was they specifically hit up these Alaska towns because it's dark 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And it's like, oh, that's quite clever. So yeah, 30 Days of Night, I put down Buffy the Vampire Slayer. I like my vampires a little light. I enjoyed quite a bit Renfield.
I love Renfield, man.
I thought it was hilarious. Nicolas Cage as Dracula is perfect. Like, just let him chew like scenery the whole time as Dracula. It's great. But of course, the greatest vampire movie is What We Do in the Shadows. I absolutely adore What We Do in the Shadows. It's still my favorite Taika Waititi film. There isn't a time that I can't put that on and just laugh. And they're like, just how deep they get into making fun of like the vampire tropes. Like, they have the old school, like 800 year old vampire who's like basically just
Peter,
anything Peter. Yeah. The roommate downstairs. Like, it's so like well-crafted and well thought out. And, I don't know. I can't speak highly enough. I like you guys like a good like spoof or a good comedy, and What We Do in the Shadows definitely spoofs just this, you know, if you really think about it, like Nosferatu and Dracula, those came out in the 1930s, right? So this is almost a 90-year-old character, and potentially, you know, you can call it, I don't know, franchise or theme, you know, with the whole theme of vampires. And so something like What We Do in the Shadows or Renfield, I love just poking fun at something that has existed for so long that, frankly, it doesn't terrify me, but it does some people. And so I don't know. I like a good little make fun of something like that. And I think What We Do in the Shadows is brilliant.
I think one movie we should bring up, and I actually revisited this about 2 months ago, is Francis Ford Coppola's, you know, Bram Stoker's Dracula, Morgan Freeman, not Morgan Freeman. That'd be a different movie. Gary Oldman is what I meant to say.
Yes.
Keanu Reeves, who was, you know, a lot of people criticized that he was pretty bad in that movie. Wyona Ryder, Anthony Dracula Hopkins.
Master.
Yeah.
He's terrible in that movie.
I got to say, you know, rewatching it, I can't really say I enjoyed it, but I did appreciate some of the filmmaking techniques. Francis Ford Coppola used a lot of old school filmmaking techniques in that film. The production value is off the charts. It looks amazing. Gary Oldman gives an amazing performance. But for me, the movie just didn't come together as a whole. It's kind of a scattered shot and all over the place. So it never really scared me either. It was more just, I appreciate the film work that's going. The last two movies I want to say, one I haven't seen. As an 80s kid, you know, I've seen almost every 80s movie, horror film, action, you name it. But once in a while, a movie slips through the cracks, and I just never saw it for some reason. I had never seen the 80s film Fright Night until about a year or two ago. And I had a blast of that movie. I thought that movie was so much fun. The 80s is pouring out of it. The lead actor is kind of terrible, but everything around him is amazing. And the main vampire in that is so cool. In the last 30 minutes, is a really cool practical effect gore fest in a fun way. So Fright Night is a movie I didn't grow up watching. I didn't see it until much later in life. And I'm sad that I didn't grow up with it because it is a really fun movie. And the last film that I haven't seen, but when I was looking up, you know, vampire films that came up a lot, was the William Dafoe film Shadow of the Vampire, which was nominated for Best Actor but didn't win. John Malkovich is also in this movie. It's about the making of the film Nosferatu. And the guy who you see that looks like Nosferatu is actually William Dafoe, who actually looks like that and is actually a vampire. I hear that movie's amazing. I hear it's really – Dafoe is an amazing performance. It's one of those I need to check off. So hopefully one of these days I'll catch up with it.
I'm like a side note. Like, I am in the middle of a rewatch of Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Okay.
But it is so bad. I'm sorry, Jason. It's
no,
so
I don't
bad.
Think it's – I don't think it's that good as a movie, but I at least terrible. Can appreciate the craftsmanship. Coppola is a good director. He has all the money in the world. The money is on the screen, but it doesn't work for me as a whole as a movie.
I'm having to do it. It's one of those movies that I'm breaking up in 15-minute increments to get so savage.
Yeah, because it's almost like a stream of consciousness. It just doesn't feel like it has a beginning, middle, or end. It's just... things are happening constantly, but none of them really feel like they're connected in some way. Yeah. Some people love that movie. I don't.
I do not. And I will say, like, for people that bash Keanu Reeves in that movie, I am a Keanu Reeves mark. And him and Winona Ryder in that movie, both of whom I love as performers, are horrendous. It is probably the greatest stain on their careers. They're so bad in it.
There's a, and I don't quote Family Guy very often, but I'll always remember that quote where they're talking about how bad Bram Stoker's Dracula was. And then they they are having Winona Ryder and Keanu Reeves do a scene together. And the director is like, oh, my God, he's like, this movie is horrible. And the like the writer was like, but wait, there's a topless scene of Winona Ryder. And he's like, OK, keep it filming. I mean, I will make a case for the 2011 Fright Night, too. That's a lot of fun. Anton Yelchin, RIP Anton Yelchin, but Colin Farrell's in that one. Like, it's pretty stacked cast. That was a fun movie, too.
Yeah, I saw that. It was okay.
Another honorable mention is for people that like dumb, stupid movies. Jamie Foxx released a vampire movie. It was Netflix called, I think it was Day Shift.
Yeah,
that movie was just super fun. Him and Snoop Dogg, that's definitely a movie worth, you know, streaming for a couple hours if you just want to turn off your brain and have some fun.
See, I gotta disagree. I just found it mindless, but not fun. I did like Snoop Dogg though. Snoop was fun.
I'm with Benny. It was so ridiculously over the top and stupid, but there's a very like interesting concept in that movie in that there's like a union. Of vampire hunters, like vampire hunters came together and created a union, and like the teeth have like value. There's like stock and value in the vampire teeth. I don't know. I found some fun with it. Yeah, I'm with Betty. Like the scene with Snoop Dogg and he's got the big chain gun and you think he's dead, but somehow at the end he comes walking out, lights up a joint. Like, ah, it's just, it's over the top, stupid, cheesy fun.
It's a Netflix movie. That's all I'll say. It feels like a Netflix movie.
Well, guys, I think we're ready to switch gears, and we're going to go into our review of The Last Voyage of the Demeter.
George Washington, man, he was in a cult, and the cult was in the aliens, man. You didn't know that?
Somewhere between free love and safe sex.
Benny!
Tie-dye and button fly.
We should be up for anything.
Ed Sullivan and MTV.
Sounds stupid, doesn't it?
There was a generation.
The 60s rocked. The 70s, they obviously sucked.
That was dazed and confused.
Maybe the 80s will be radical.
Rated R. Starts tomorrow at select theaters.
What was for dinner last night?
It was some chicken and, noodly stuff.
They won't forget Stovetop Stuffing. That warm, dig-right-in taste. Just watch their memories improve.
Last night was Stovetop and stuff.
Make them Stovetop, because everything else is just stuff.
All right, welcome back, folks. And we are talking The Last Voyage of the Demeter. Did not do great at the box office this past weekend. I think the four of us probably contributed, or at least three of us contributed to the LA County earnings of this movie, but did not have great critical success and financial success. So We're going to give our thoughts, but of course, we have to welcome in the one, the only, the amazing Nosferatu.
Yep, there we go. We got it. That's my one boat pun. This is my one pun I can get for this movie. I was really excited about this film when I got into the theater and I realized we weren't seeing it as a joke. I thought we were all just going to see this movie as like a joke because of the Dracula on a boat thing. Like I literally, and then I got there and somebody was like, oh, it's by the guy who did Autopsy of Jane Doe. And I was like, oh, I love that movie. And I saw the cast like as soon as it started and I was like, oh, this looks great. And then I saw it with Lon Harris and about 20 minutes in, he leans in, he goes, Nosferatu. And I was like, damn it. There we go. That's the best one.
Well, yes. Directed by Andre Overdrawl. I'm going to butcher that for sure. But he directed Troll Hunter. He directed The Autopsy of Jane Doe. He directed Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. So the dude knows horror, right? Mm-hmm. And he's given this property, which is based on one chapter of Bram Stoker's novel, Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
So he has 6 pages to basically of inspiration to go by. And he directs a 2-hour movie based off of the 6 pages that was the actual chapter of Bram Stoker's Dracula that did become The Last Voyage of the Demeter. I'm going to go around. Let's go through our initial thoughts. And then we'll go into some spoiler territories. We'll talk about what worked, what didn't work. I'm so excited to hear more of Drew's take on this because she was genuinely excited to see this movie, right?
Oh, I was so excited. Well, once I realized who was in it, that we weren't joke seeing. I was so happy when we were joke seeing it, too. I thought that was going to be funny. I feel like I just found out this movie existed like a day before it came out.
Right. Well, tell us your initial thoughts of this movie. Do you like, do you not like? Take it away.
You know, I really, you know, there's so much to do with Dracula lore, and there's so much about this that I wanted to really love, like Dracula on the boat. It brings up so many questions, like, you know, kind of water and open, you know, water. How much can Dracula do when you're on, like, you know, marine ocean territory? He can't fly in the sun. So, like, there just seemed to be so much topography and, like, geography you could play with in this movie that I feel like, unfortunately, was kind of wasted, like the conceptual idea of how cool Dracula on a boat sounded. But I thought the performances were amazing. I love the Onion Knight from Game of Thrones showing up. I love that kid from Cobweb, who I just saw last weekend as Toby. That movie was also fantastic. But Corey Hawkins killed it. Like everyone. Oh, David Dalmachian. Dalmachian? Is that it right?
Don't ask me to pronounce it.
David Dalmachian. You know, that guy, he was fantastic. The cast was great. I wanted Dracula to be Jeremy Strong. For some reason, I had in my head there was going to be a stunt casting of like Jeremy Strong was going to show up at the end of that movie. That would have been perfect. But, you know, all in all, it was kind of underwhelming, I'd say, for Dracula on a boat.
I mean, I'm with you, Drew. I kind of wanted Kendall Roy to show up and be the guy killing everybody on the ship. But alas, that did not happen. JT, your thoughts, buddy.
Yeah. You know, I saw the trailers for this and it's one of those trailers where I'm like, this could go either way. This could be like really awesome and surprise a lot of people, or it could be really bland and not very fulfilling as a vampire boat movie. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, I think it's a little bit more of the latter. The frustrating thing is there's a lot of great ingredients for this to be a good movie. Mm. Cinematography is really well done. The atmosphere is there. The score, you like Drew said, a great cast of character actors who really know how to trope the scenery. And I just don't know where the movie doesn't come to life. I know Dracula's dead. The movie just never fully came to life for me. And it was frustrating because, like I said, all the ingredients are there for a really good Dracula stew. Yeah. I wanted to savor every bite. But I just basically, you know, it kind of just happened in front of me. It felt like an episode of like Tales from the Crypt or that Del Toro show. It felt like an episode of that show, but too long.
Yeah.
This movie should not have been 2 hours. Should have been 90 minutes, maybe hour 40. Because it's such a one place, you know, when you make a movie like Buried or Phone Booth and you're stuck in one location, make that movie short. Give me 84 minutes. In and out. I get everything I need. So the movie felt too long, and it just never came to life for me. So I couldn't help but be disappointed. But that being said, I didn't hate my time in the theater. I wasn't sitting there you know, looking at my watch or my phone watch, and be like, how long until I can get the hell out of here? I was like, I kept waiting for the movie to surprise me or to like live up to its potential. Mm-hmm. And so kind of frustrating to watch because it never did.
You know, if I was your editor and this was like a written review, I'd be like, I'd punch up the headline with like, you know, Voyage of the Dementor, which is what I would call it. I'd say like bloodless, toothless, all in all, whatever. I'd make a lot of puns there, JT, and I feel like you got half of them.
Fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you really did. Like, do you spend a few hours today, like, writing up that quick little dialogue? Like, how can I insert the word bite? How can I insert dead?
Top of the noggin. I'm like Eminem for movie reviews, man. I can just spit.
Door hinge with George. Yeah, he can rhyme orange with anything. It's amazing.
JT bringing the heat tonight. Well, Benny, how about you, buddy? What was your thoughts on Dracula at Sea?
So I hated the trailers for this movie. I thought the trailers for this movie were awful. And I had very little hope for a movie that was six pages being stretched for 2 hours. So I went into this with my head hung down, like, there's no way this is going to work. And it was okay. So I feel like it was a win because I went in expecting complete and utter garbage. And I got like a dark version of the Haunted Mansion, just some relentless okay. Mm-hmm. And so from what I went in going with, I think that's a win. And like I'm with everyone else, like I think there are maybe four or five choices in this movie that would have taken it from okay to being like, now that is a good horror movie. They didn't make those choices, but given what I was expecting, okay is a win.
You know, I don't know why this keeps going off. You know what? It feels like it, with any other director, this could have been better. Like Dave Eggers, Mike Flanagan, the guy who did You're Next. It Follows. I feel like all these people could have done like a good, better version of this story.
I don't disagree. I'm kind of in the same boat with the rest of you guys. The movie's fine. It's just fine. Like there's nothing that like propels this movie to be an all-time horror classic. I mentioned it earlier. If this movie had come out like 10 years ago when vampires were still really kind of the in thing, this movie may have been looked on a little bit differently. At times it felt boring. Like, and it's hard to say that because there really is like great casting in this. There's great performances in this. Corey Hawkins' character is super intriguing and his performance is great. I enjoy like the people on the boat and their performances in the cast, but in the environment, I think JT, you mentioned it, the atmosphere, the whole thing. And I like, you know, the ghost stories by candlelight and the ghost stories by lantern light. And you got that a lot. And just scenery being illuminated by lightning and thunder only. I mean, the atmosphere was great, but the movie just didn't work. It was just too long. And I wanted more of Dracula. I found that there was just not enough of him. Go ahead, Drew.
No, I didn't mean to interrupt. I just meant a hearty yeah. Agreed.
All right, so should we jump into spoilers and just tear this thing apart?
Sure.
Once again, JT bringing the puns, right?
Just sink in. Sink your teeth in.
I think, Drew, you mentioned Mike Flanagan, who directed an amazing show about vampires called Black Mass.
Midnight Mass.
Midnight Mass, sorry. Black Mass was a Johnny Depp movie with Roy
Totally Dominic. Different. Yep.
Hey, he did look like a vampire in my defense.
That was what Eric said that he wanted the stunt casting to be at the end of this movie. He's like, let it be Johnny Depp. And I was like, maybe.
Or just showing up in Whitey Bulger makeup.
Yeah, exactly. There's just regular, no makeup.
So, what I loved about Midnight Mass was they didn't know what a vampire was.
Yeah.
They didn't know, and even though it was modern times, what was interesting in the beginning of this movie was, once again, they don't know what a vampire is. Mm-hmm. And I liked the way that they had to discover that throughout the beginning of the film. You know, people here, when they got bit, they didn't just become a vampire like in Van Helsing. Mm-hmm. It is more like, what is wrong with this person? They almost became like a vampire zombie in a way.
Yeah.
So I think there's some really interesting ideas in this movie. But those things are too far and in between from the rest of the movie. Like we said, 2 hours is too long. So, and I agree. I think, you know, the lead character has a really interesting story coming at it from, you know, actually an African-American perspective gives him a different angle than we see in most of these vampire films. But at the end of the day, the vampire is never really scary. It's more interesting because we're the audience. We know what's going on with the vampire. We know the rules. Mm-hmm. We know this is Bram Stoker's Dracula. If I was writing this movie, I would have had them on a ship. They knew what they were carrying, and I would have had a pirate ship take out the original ship and steal all the boxes off it. Now you got Pirates of the Caribbean.
Then you got Johnny Depp all over again.
Yeah, all over again.
You know what I would have?
It would have been more fun. I think it would have been more fun that way.
I think I would have liked this movie more had they not told me that it was this boat and that I had not known it was not only just like a vampire movie, but specifically Dracula. Something about that, like, because we know the story of Dracula and it's such like a well-worn trope. What was cool about Midnight Mass is you didn't know at first what was the monster or like what the thing is. And the fact that they had able to conceive it, they only conceived it through religious terms. So it was like an angel. And like that was like really cool. And like this movie had so many opportunities to do something like that, like have all the people be paranoid that it was one of their own because it's a small boat. It's like Clue. There's only so many places you can hide. The idea that this one can fly, but it's open water. And when the sun comes up, like you just drive that thing a mile offshore. And if there's nowhere for it to go, if you burn the ship, like there's so many interesting like elements to play with. The characters could have had more depth. Any one of those characters. I thought Corey Hawkins was going to be Renfield. Like I thought he was right because they kept like playing up this idea that he was so interested in like studying Dracula.
Yeah, that would have been interesting.
Yeah,
you know, I do give this movie it did have some cojones because it killed a dog and a kid.
Oh God,
which are two of the things that usually never die in a horror movie. So I give some credit for like really pushing the envelope as to who they would make their victims be. I was like, oh okay, this movie's got some balls, but it wasn't enough to save the movie for me.
Have you guys seen that episode of that's where I love Death and Robots or Love, Sex and Robots. There's a great episode that David Fincher directed that's sort of like a Cthulhu version of this, and it's fantastic. But it's not like a Dracula, but it's sort of like something's taking over a ship and it's taking the crew out one by one, and the crew have to decide whether to bring it to land, which is where it wants to go, or to whether to like drive out to the middle of the ocean where it can't hurt anybody.
That sounds awesome.
And like and they're all drawing straws, and it's about like boat democracy versus, you know, boat mutiny, I guess, or whatever they call that system where it's a captain and whatever, but you can do a mutiny. So I guess it's kind of like democracy. Me and Lon had a big fight about whether boat democracy is real. but there's like a lot of interesting concepts in that too, that I feel like, this could have been done. Like if it was Dave Eggers, you would have felt like the visceral sense of being on the boat and the claustrophobia and like the rocking water and just how isolated you are out in the middle of the ocean. I feel like with the It Follows guys, you could have played with the what's his name, David Mitchell something. Anyway, you could play with the idea of like, what are the rules of this? Can it like fly during the day? Like how long until it burns up? Can it like take people just little by little? And how much free will do they have? Like that could have been like a cool element of it. A24 has kind of ruined the idea of just doing a straightforward movie like this, maybe, right? Because we're now so like it's got to be atmospheric or it's nothing.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting how the vampire Dracula changed throughout the film. Like he was becoming stronger and stronger, but it wasn't just he was getting stronger. He looked like a little, I don't know what he looked like in the beginning. He looked like a little little Slender Man guy.
He looked like Gollum.
Yeah,
like that was the first thing, like when they first showed the like quick little image, and you know, when you first kind of see him, you just see the split second and then lightning flashes and he's gone. But my first thought was like, oh, fucking Schmeagles. Like on the boat.
That's exactly what I thought. But also, again, this is where it hurts by knowing it's Dracula. You get it in the pretext. It's Dracula. So you're like, well, that's a count. That's like a dude. That's like, it's not like a monster. It's not feral. It's like, you know, it's Dracula. And that kind of like almost like takes the wind out of its sails a little bit because we know where this is going. And we know how much like sentient like ability it has. And like, so by the end, I really did want it to just be a dude, like a Gary Oldman dude, but it was just that thing again with that top hat, which was kind of hilarious.
I think, I don't know about you guys, it's like, like you said, who's going to be the actor that's going to be playing him at the very end here? And he looked like a burn victim or something.
Yeah,
like
he got somebody teeth.
Somebody who survived the fire and barely has a face. Like, well, how's he just walking around town in that top hat?
I think because Eric's view was this was how Corey Hawkins sees him. Like everyone else sees him as a normal dude at this point. But like,
oh interesting.
He's connected to him because he hears the rapping of the stick.
But the movie does nothing to
No, the movie does nothing to show that. No.
we need to get some Benny thoughts here. Benny, give us some spoiler thoughts.
So I think the movie did a pretty decent job of, you know, making you sense the claustrophobic nature of things, the shut-in mm-hmm. nature. And I think it made a few gutsy choices, like with killing the kid, like, you know, with once they get bit, knowing that the disease is progressing. But one, I don't think they spent enough time with that. Like, once these people have been bitten, you know that this person is going to turn against you. You know that you have to kill them, and the moral dilemma of killing someone you love to save them. Like, I think the movie needed to focus more on that. And I think the buildup to, like, these gutsy choices they did make, like killing the kid and killing the dog, like, they almost seemed glossed over. They happened, but they didn't have the impact that they should happen. Like you're saying, like, mm-hmm. that breaks mm-hmm. horror movie tropes. Mm-hmm. They should have been building up to these moments when these tropes are being broken. Mm-hmm. Those should be the key pillars the movies are built on. And it just seemed like, well, we're going to go have dinner in the bottom of the boat. I know the kid's dead, but we're going past that now.
In fairness, the captain did take it pretty hard.
Yo, that guy was great. That guy was doing the Lord's work. Captain Any Knight from Game of Thrones. Yeah, he was.
Liam Cunningham.
Yeah, I just like the same guy. He's just playing the same dude. But yeah, I feel like that's exactly right, Benny. I feel like there's a lot of cool things you could play with, especially even with the religion stuff. Like the fact that the one thing that was not the same as in the books was he wasn't affected by the crosses or your belief, or no matter how hard you did believe. He even did that thing with Liam Cunningham's character at the end where he seemed to lash him up to the wheel like Christ, like a parody of Jesus on the cross. Mm. And like, I thought, like, that's interesting. Okay, but like, we really don't get enough time. So all the things, basically, they're not jump scares, but they amount to like, here's the plot beat, and now we did something different. But there's no emotional resonance, because then these kind of characters, as we're saying, it's too long, but they also had no time to build the dynamic between any of these people.
Yeah. I mean, we learned that Dracula definitely does not abide by maritime law. He killed a dog and a child, right?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's open seas, so you're actually allowed to do whatever you want.
That's a good point. International seas, that's true.
And yeah, there we go.
And I feel that a very poor creature design of Dracula really hindered this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because even when you got those little moments where, like, you know, he just creepily pops into the scene and then he vanishes, you know, the few jump scares that the movie gives you, it's a very generic vampire. You know, it looks like Golem. It looks like things that aren't scary or something you've not seen a trillion times.
There's
the only good point of creature design in this is when he kills the man, and it's very practical. You can tell it's the guy with makeup on and he has the thick hands crushing into the guy's skull. Mm-hmm. That looked interesting. That looked like a horror movie. But then the rest of it is just these little generic CGI snippets of character design that I think really take away from the atmosphere that the movie is building the entire time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's completely on the creature designer. That's not on the director shouldn't have let that creature design go forward, but that's on him. And I will say the other thing, in my personal opinion, if you want to get professional critics to love your movie, you make it boring and you make it creepy and you don't have the good guy win. That's how you get a 5-star rating nowadays. And they had that. Like, when Corey Hawkins is watching her burn to death, is watching her burn to death, and he's sitting on this sail like, shit, everyone died.
Oh, we lost Ben there for a second.
Oh, shit.
Kicked me out.
Sorry.
So anyway, like I was saying, like, they had the perfect ending to this slow burn, creepy movie where Corey Hawkins is clinging onto a piece of driftwood, watching the only other member of the ship voluntarily burn to death.
Mm-hmm.
That's where this movie needed to stop. The mm-hmm. rest of it, where it went on and he's going to become the new Van Helsing and he's going to fight this vampire in London, it's so cheesy and stupid. And whatever emotional impact the movie had created, it threw it away the second that the movie didn't fade to black after he's sitting there watching her burn.
I mean, fair enough. And I really thought that was hilarious at the end where they were like, for the last thing I do, I'm going to send this creature back to hell. And I was like, Van Helsing? Or like, I wanted him to be like, or my name isn't Van Helsing. Like, I thought he was going to adopt the name Van Helsing at the end. kind of hard to agree. I really do think that there was so much going on with Hawkins' character that, like, it feels like there's another draft of the script where he sort of joins up with Dracula or becomes like his ghoulish bidding, like becomes like his Renfield. The other guy I thought was maybe going to take that position was the cook, that actor, because he was so religious and like the idea that like that's not going to do anything in the face of this more feral kind of beast was a really cool. Again, like all these different avenues you could have played with. I think what's frustrating about this movie is it feels like a bunch of missed opportunities. Like you can see the better movie, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of that, I was really excited at the very beginning of this film because I love when they tease the boat at the beginning. The guy is like shook. He's like in shock because of what he saw on that boat. He's like, I do not want to go back on that boat. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, snap. What is going to happen at the end of this movie? It's going to be a massacre. Let's talk about the ending and their plan to take on Dracula, because Dracula doesn't even break a sweat.
No.
He's just like, oh, are you guys messing with me? Like, what's going on? He takes them all out within like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And then at some point, I don't know how she got the boat to break perfectly onto him. It didn't really make sense to me. And he just pushes it off. I think the problem is, you know, like this is one chapter of a very long book. So you know Dracula's not going to die. You know he's going to survive. But I was still hoping for more of a exciting battle at the end. Just Dracula picking them off one by one. Like, you guys aren't on my level.
Also, like, are they stupid? Like, they know now that everything burns in the sun. They could have just driven that boat in the opposite direction. Just make it a mile offshore and wait for sunrise. Like, they were so dumb. Like, I think Liam Cunningham, even at one point, is like, I'll stay here and you guys can go. And I'm going to take this thing far away from land.
Yeah,
which is like the only thing you need to do if you want to get rid of the ship. Then Dracula's dead because he can't fly in the sun and you've given him no place to go. So, yeah, like wait till sunrise, burn the boat, sink the boat. And they just did it right next to the shore. Like, are they dumb? I don't get it. I guess they had to follow the trope of the book, but like, did they? Did they really?
So I've read Bram Stoker's Dracula and the book. This chapter, basically, everyone is dead. The boat crashes to shore, and all they report is seeing a black dog running from the scene.
Oh, and the dog lived.
Well, the dog was Dracula.
Gotcha.
In Bram Stoker's Dracula, he could turn himself into a dog. So people just claim to have seen a hound running from the scene. And the only person left on board was the captain, and he had tied himself to the mast. Basically like, okay, well, I'm going to do whatever I can to potentially kill Dracula. And he doesn't. Dracula feeds on him and he just sees the captain's log. That's all that's left of this. Mm-hmm. So you're basically left with like six pages where at the end, everyone is dead. Mm-hmm. And so what they did was they were like, okay, well, we're going to elaborate this. And yeah, the final battle, terrible. Didn't stand a chance. Not very well thought by anybody on the end.
No.
But I think the most important thing is like the sequel bait ending for me it did not
horrible
work. Benny,
horrible.
I think you said it was, in your opinion, it was stupid, and I'll agree with that. It felt like, are you really still trying to do this like monster universe thing? Is that what's happening?
That's what Lon said. He was like, is this actually part of the Tom Cruise Mummy Universal Horror Monsterverse?
That was the first thing that crept through my head too. At the end of it was like, oh, they're still trying to go for this. All right.
Well, okay. Yeah, sure.
Let's do it.
This movie ended with them in the water and her setting on fire. And then at some point someone told them, you need to go back and add this extra piece.
Like, I don't know.
That's what it truly felt like.
Well, it's also interesting because, like, right, like you said, it's only a chapter of the book, and you can play around with that, though, right? Because it's just a log. It's a captain's log, and that can be faulty. That can be, like, he could be lying. He could be he could have not been there for the final battle, you know, whatever it is. So they already played enough around with it where the captain is no longer alive, and, like, the boat sank, so they don't see his body. To your point, though, it's supposed to be this gruesome thing that washed up the shore, but technically it's just an empty boat. What was so scary? Like, there's literally nothing on board. Also, the idea that Dracula, they bring up this idea at the end that he's like, oh, he was rationing us. And I was like, not really. Like, there's like eight of you left and you're like basically by the shore. And he was just kind of just chilling that entire movie. He could have found him during the daytime. Once you learn the rules from this very helpful female character who just shows up and is like, I know everything about Dracula, so don't worry. You're not going to figure this out. Like, you can spend the day searching for Dracula. It's a small boat. You could spend the day doing that. You don't have to wait till night, you know?
halfway through the movie, the vibes that I started to get for this movie was, oh, they're basically doing Alien on a boat. Like the movie Alien on a boat basically was my, like, the exact thought. And honestly, that's still how I feel. It was Alien on a boat, but with Dracula.
Like, yeah.
They had a chance. They're planning to destroy the alien. I mean, it worked in that movie, but there was one survivor at the
end. I heard that comparison before I saw it, and I think it hurt the movie because I was like, Alien with Dracula but on a boat, this is gonna be awesome. And I just don't think it lived up to that so-called premise that some critics called it, Alien on a boat.
I really would have liked them to be figuring out the rules. I think without her, the movie would have been cooler and it would have made a lot more sense, especially that final battle, because they just wouldn't have known. Like at the end, they're like, oh shit, it has wings. And you're like, I mean, we've already seen it in another scene have wings. So we, the audience, know it has wings. But like they don't. So they're just figuring it out. But they have a character there who can like connect with Dracula, who can tell them all the rules about how vampires work. And like, I think the movie kind of was hurt by her. She felt like a little bit of an exposition, like little help for the characters. They technically could remove her and the movie could play out, I think, a lot cooler. Cause then they just don't know what the fuck's happening. Right. Like then it's just like craziness. And they're just like, is it one of us? Like what's going on here? It's because you have a character being like, it's a Dracula.
It's funny because we're all like giving our opinions of how you could have fixed this movie and made it better. It just kind of goes to show you like it's a disappointing movie in a lot of ways because the premise on paper sounds pretty awesome.
Yes.
And put in the right hands and the right script and the right director, this could have been a really awesome movie. But unfortunately, I mean, do you want to do overall thoughts?
It's a shame. I wonder if this was a studio issue. Like, really, I wonder if this is rewrites. Well, go ahead.
It had a DreamWorks logo in the beginning, which I haven't seen in, I feel like, a decade. So this thing must have been, like, been in pre-production for a long time.
You haven't seen Minions? Any of the gentle Minions?
Do they have DreamWorks? Do the DreamWorks logo before that?
I mean, it's a DreamWorks film. I don't know if they have the logo.
Okay. I know it's Illumination or whatever.
So I did a little homework on that, JT, and this script has been floating around for like 7 or 8 years, and it's been attached to like 3 or 4 different directors.
Oh, interesting.
For the potential movie. So I do think that there was, yes, the studio interference. They bought the IP. They grabbed this guy. And look, the director has put together a decent horror resume.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We're all saying the same thing, like, hey, there's a lot of possibility that you could do with this. But I think the studio was like, this is the movie that we bought. This is the movie we want you to make. And yeah, that Corey Hawkins scene, I bet that there is a cut of this movie where it ends to Benny's point, where Anna's sailing off, burning up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Corey Hawkins' performance and character was so interesting that they were like, oh, maybe we can stoke this fire a little bit.
I feel like this is a studio note. Because, again, like the movie that he, it makes sense if this script is floating around, he didn't write it. Because I do want to give this director the credit, like the benefit of the doubt. Because Autopsy of Jane Doe, fantastic horror film. Like this could have been that where they don't know what they're dealing with. It's like a two-hander. They're just stuck in like this building. They can't get out. It's very claustrophobic. And at the end, no spoilers, but like it's a very tragic ending where it's not a happy ending. But it's a very like moving character study of these two, this father-son kind of relationship, and it's very scary. But he wrote that. So I feel like this could have been like the studio's like, no, like there's gonna be a survivor, it's gonna be this guy. Like you're right, because like the tragic ending is the better ending. The movie that's written where they don't know it's Dracula is the better movie. There's just so much like I feel like I expected from this director. But then again, I didn't have that much time to be disappointed because I found out 5 minutes before the movie started it was by him.
I mean, I agree with you. Jane Doe, that's a great indie horror film.
And so good.
I thought, you know, Scary Stories definitely had some cool stuff in it. And yeah, maybe it's just a director caught in the, studio machine and probably wasn't able to put his actual stamp on the film. Mm-hmm. But he is a skilled director and the movie looks really well done.
Mm-hmm.
The cinematography, like the tone. I think it just came down to script, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, because Troll Hunter 2 is a great movie where you're like, they don't know what's up. Right? Troll Hunter's great.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It's very good. It's one of the best like found footage movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I still have faith in this guy. Maybe it's just the script.
I'm going to ask you guys a question as maybe you're more from, you read the Bram Stoker book, but this is something that's really bothering me about the movie that maybe I just missed something, but there were all kinds of Mark Twain references for no apparent reason. Like, I'm pretty sure Corey Hawkins' character's name was Samuel Clemens. and the dog's name was Huckleberry. And I didn't understand why there were all of these Mark Twain references in a Huckleberry in a Bram Stoker movie.
That's really interesting.
I didn't catch that until you said it right now, but no, yeah, you're right.
I noticed that Del Smolchian's character was named Vocek when I thought that was maybe for a second, like the Voynich manuscript, or like Vocek seems like a very, like I've heard that name before recently in relation to something horror related. So I was wondering if that was a reference, but no, I didn't realize his name's Clemens. There was Huckleberry. Was he around back in Dracula's day? Was that still a guy? Oh, they were, right?
Yeah. Bram Stoker's Dracula has none of these references. Like you learn none of the characters in this in that specific chapter, The Voyage of the Demeter. You only learn the captain's name because he's the only body found.
Mm-hmm.
So the boat crashes to land. And, witnesses say they see a dog jump off of it and run away. And yeah, so that's kind of it. That's the only character you're introduced to is the dog and the captain.
I'll be honest. I spent 20 minutes during the movie wondering, is there some like missing Mark Twain payoff that I'm just not getting? Why the hell? What am I missing?
Maybe the writer of the movie is a fan.
Okay.
Which I would one of the eight writers of this movie. This movie's actually written by Mark Twain. It's funny. I'm trying to figure out in time and place, like when did he write Dracula?
When did Dracula exist?
Well, yeah, I mean, when was it written?
When was it written? Yeah.
In the 1890s, right?
Okay, so that was the time that Mark Twain was around. So like that makes sense.
Mark Twain's a vampire?
Well, I mean, the guy, if we're trying to specifically think that Dracula takes place in the time that Bram Stoker wrote it. Bram Stoker, by the way, was a freak. Like, he was a post office guy. He used to send these crazy letters to, not E. Cummings, to Walt Whitman. Like, these these creepy stalker fan letters.
Really?
Yeah. It's insane. But, like, so he's a little creepy guy. I'm sure he's very literary. So if you want to believe that, like, maybe he's just a fan of Mark Twain and, like, it wasn't in the book, but somebody was like, it would be a cool Easter egg to put one of his favorite, like, Bram Stoker's favorite writer, like make a lot of references to him because maybe the characters would have read the book.
That's interesting.
You know, maybe.
Now I want a Huckleberry Finn movie, but it's also he's a vampire.
Yeah. It's not Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Oh, no, never mind. I don't want that.
Huckleberry Finn Vampire Hunter.
Yeah.
Well, JT, final thoughts, buddy.
Yeah, you know, again, I'll just repeat kind of what I said earlier. A lot of great ingredients, you know, the actors, the score, the cinematography. They had all the tools to make a really good movie, but I think maybe it just failed them in the script department. I do agree with you guys. I felt like the ending was just thrown in there for a possible sequel. And it's like, who's looking for a sequel to this movie? Nobody. Just make a good, solid horror film. You know, stick to your guns. And I feel like they didn't really do that. I give it some credit for pushing the envelope, like I said, to kill the kid, kill the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone went in this film with the best intentions, and they probably did the best they could with what they were given. And just at the end of the day, they didn't have the material they needed to make a really good movie.
Yeah. I just looked up, by the way, guys. Turns out there are a ton of Mark Twain references to Dracula.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Yeah, nice.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Then I feel far less confused.
That was a good catch, Benny.
Yeah. Way to go with that. That's pretty cool. So that was maybe just in there, like in the text somewhere. Like they called a dog Huckleberry somewhere in the book, and I just missed it.
Benny, what's your final thoughts there, pal?
I would say, like, if you're in a spot where you're feeling like really emotionally numb, and you don't want to experience anything bad, but you also don't want to experience anything good. Like, it's the perfect time to do a double feature of this and Haunted Mansion. You will leave feeling nothing either way. But now, if you are not in that space, I would encourage you to maybe check out Near Dark from the 1980s, or if you need a laugh, like I said in round number two, Let the Wrong One In, you know? But other than that, that's pretty much what I think. These are forgettable movies, but they're not terrible. They're way better than the trailers.
Guys, remember how I just said that Mark Twain was a stalker of Walt Whitman? Turns out he also was a stalker of Mark. I mean, sorry, Bram Stoker was also a stalker of Mark Twain.
I was going to say, wait a minute. I thought Bram Stoker was the creep.
No. It turns out Mark Twain autographed some stuff for Bram Stoker. I mean, this guy was like a creep. It's so funny.
And these guys were all around the same time?
Yeah.
We need like a Breakfast Club type movie, but just with these guys in like a bar or something.
They're all just being stalked by this one creepy like post office worker, like a disgruntled post office worker who is just Bram Stoker.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Let's get to work on that scripter.
He's just got a little vial of Mark Twain blood around his neck. Yeah.
Who could Timmy Chalamet play? Mark Twain, what are we thinking?
No, he's going to play Edgar Allan Poe.
There you go. Perfect.
No, shave Timothy Chalamet's head and he's totally Bram Stoker.
Just oh, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
Little creepy skinny guy. Yeah, for sure.
We know Jared Leto wants to be it. He's going to gun for that role.
He's going to get 60 pounds in the next 30 days.
Is there like a female writer we could throw in here? Guess, you know.
Around during this time.
I'm trying to think. Was Poe around? So this was like what the London Society of
Edgar Allan
Poe would have been around.
When was Jane Austen?
Maybe a little earlier.
Jane Austen was not around. that's very funny. Mary Shelley was before that, I think.
Oh, there you go, Mary Shelley.
Right, I think she's a little bit like. What was 1893 in literature? That's
get a little Frankenstein in there.
Moose, Oscar Wilde.
Talking about Ocean's 11. Let's just make an Ocean's 11 type movie, but with all these writers of some sort.
All these writers. Stealing from Bram Stoker.
Yeah.
It's Penny Dreadful or League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. That's kind of what we're talking about here.
Oh, you're right. That didn't work out.
Oscar Wilde was around. That's pretty cool. I feel like you can do something with that. Yeah.
There you go.
No, it's totally the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. It's all literary. Yeah. Well, Drew, any final thoughts before we move on? And thank you for sending me these links on Bram Stoker. I'm fascinated with this now.
Oh, yeah. I had to send you guys. I'll have to send you the link of like the creepy fan letter he wrote Walt Whitman. They just went on. He just like Whitman never responded. So he just kept writing. Oof, creepy. Freaking creepy. I kind of want to I want to see this movie again, but I just want to see it adapted by a different director. You know what? Not even a different director. I want someone to have the writer-director control of it. That's what this feels like. If this script was like floating around, they just gave it to somebody, then no one could have fixed it past what the studio wanted. So I would have liked to see this as a total creative vision from this director or from an Eggers A24 type or, just somebody else.
Well, folks, we are going to wrap it up, but before we do, we definitely want to thank our very, very, very amazing guest, Drew Grant, Video Drew, Nosferatu Drew.
Nosferatu Drew. That's the best pun that's come out of this whole thing.
Yeah, I'm right. Drew, where can people find you? Tell us a little bit about you.
Yeah, you can find me. I'm at Video Drew. Video Drew is one word at all across social media. I'm now managing editor of a site called Passion Fruit. It's spelled Passion Fruit, FRU.IT. And I don't like sigh because, those are hard names to spell. But check it out. It's a site for creators. It's about creative labor. We're really diving into the issues of reactors and reviewers, YouTube people, just stuff that I think a lot of people here care about, and just trying to see what we can organize and report on in that space, because I feel like this is a really important community, and they don't get a lot of protection by anything from platforms or even other creators. So it's a really important issue. Eric has a great, Nerdchronic has a great podcast, video podcast for us called Reactorverse, where he interviews different reactors. So check that out. And that's all I got.
Well, Drew, thank you so much for joining us today. You're seriously the best. We love you.
Yay.
We need to go on a hike so I could get a picture of you next to a mountain. And I can tag it Mountain Drew.
Mountain Drew. Hell yeah.
You did there.
Do the dish.
Okay, well, I think Benny and I voted behind the scenes that JT Drew is going to be replacing you on the podcast.
Yeah.
Understood.
I can't pronounce
I'll buy glasses. I'll buy glasses. Come on.
Yep, that's the missing key, JT. You just don't look that good in glasses. Well, folks, we love y'all. We'll see you next week for Blue Beetle.
I got the backpack. I bought the backpack from AMC.
The popcorn back?
Nice. Awesome.
All right. Yeah, Blue Beetle next week. DC.
Blue Beetle. Have a good night, everybody.
Bye.